Today's retail market is rapidly changing. This year, gain the skills you need to grow your business and learn how to make a profit-focused strategy for the future. The NHPA Retail Management Certification Program will provide you with college-level training on everything from business strategy and financial management to marketing, merchandising, operations, and more. Classes are taught by successful retailers, industry experts, and collegiate professors. Don't wait. Classes start soon. Apply by July 1st to start your certification. Scholarships are also available. Learn more and apply today at yournhpa.org/RMCP. Welcome to another episode of Tell Me More, hosted by myself, Renee Chagnon. In today's episode, I'm talking with Ryan Ringer, owner of Gold Beach Lumber, a 7-chain operation in Oregon, and one of the newest executive vice chairmen of the NHPA Board of Directors. Listen to the episode to learn about Ryan's experience as a 4th-generation business owner and his thoughts on how NHPA serves independent retailers and why becoming a board member was something he wanted to pursue. Welcome to the podcast, Ryan. We're excited to have you on.
Thank you, Renee.
So before we really dive in and start, you know, talking about the business, Gold Beach Lumber, do you mind introducing yourself? Maybe tell us a little background about who you are in your life before officially joining the family business, and maybe kind of some of the stuff about like growing up and all of that.
Sure. Again, my name is Ryan Ringer. Live in Gold Beach, Oregon, and involved in family business, 4th generation. Started by obviously my great grandparents, and I kind of, as far as when I got involved in the situation, probably started at a very young age. We used to ride the school bus to work. Mom and dad couldn't afford a babysitter, so we catch the school bus to work, and for, I guess right out of the gates, I got a broom and a dustpan, and I was told to stay busy until
it's
time
to
go. It's
the tale as old as time. I love it.
Yeah, pick up nails on the floor, pick up screws, put them back in the bulk bins, and sweep floors and take out trash. So started that very early, and went off to college and did that out of the gates there, and went and did a couple odd jobs after college. And then really, it wasn't necessarily drawn back to the business, but I was really drawn back to the area and the region. Southern Oregon on the coast is gorgeous, and I kind of just knew after I lived in Reno and Baltimore randomly after college.
Wow.
Doing some jobs that were great outside sales experience. I'm very happy I did that. But I just, after living in Reno and Baltimore, I knew I wanted to get back to the South Coast. And dad was growing the business very, very strong at those times, large percentage gains annually. And he kind of outgrown himself in the fact that he needed more help.
Yeah.
So it was a great opportunity for me. It was kind of a crossroad. Do I stay doing what I'm doing, or do I come home and help my dad? And I think I made the right decision and came home and helped work side by side with my dad. So that's kind of how I got there. And
so when was that, when you went back? Like how many years after college were you gone? 2001, and you had been in college and then kind of did your own thing.
I was out of school for 2 years, and I came back 2001 and started full-time working with dad. Yep.
Nice. So do you mind sharing? I know you already mentioned that it was, the business was started by your great-grandfather, but maybe tell me just a little bit about the history of the company. I'm assuming it just started with one and now you've grown to several locations, but kind of tell me about the early years and just kind of that aspect of it.
Yeah. Great-grandparents started in 1959.
Okay.
And it was kind of more of like a little small mercantile. It wasn't necessarily a lumber yard or a hardware store. It kind of had a little of everything, including furniture. And they both got sick. And my grandfather was at a crossroads in his life, and he ended up coming back to help them while they were both sick with cancer. Mm. And he stuck around there. And, you know, the hustle and bustle of, we'll call it mercantile, my grandpa kind of streamlined things, and he thought selling boards was a lot easier than selling all kinds of random things. And he enjoyed it, and he enjoyed the customer base that came with lumber. So we kind of transitioned into that during the second generation. And then my father, he came to work with my grandpa, basically because my dad, he started out of school and into the finance world and banking, and realized that, you know, there's probably going to be a definite hard stop in the ceiling with how far he could go in the banking world. And he, as he was processing multiple loans, he realized that the people making, don't call it money, or being successful were people who had their own businesses.
Yeah.
So he had an opportunity to go to work for my grandfather, and they partnered up right out of the gates and when my dad came to work with him.
And that's then, pretty and then cool.
Then I come along. Yeah, but the growth really happened when my father and I kind of got together.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's, you know, early 2000s, the world was on fire. We were servicing our local community of Gold Beach, and then we were also servicing a town 30 miles south of us called Brookings. And we, you know, we were growing 10 to 20, 30% annually during those early 2000s, and just out of a one store operation. Mm-hmm. And then when we got to two stores, kind of a funny story there. I've worked side by side with my dad for 6-7 years, and I was hounding him to get to that second store for basically that was 6-7 years. You know, I'm young. I'm in my early mid 20s. It's not my money. You know, we're just
yeah.
You can't.
It's monopoly.
Exactly. And so I kept harassing him, hey, we need to open a store in Brookings, because the majority of our dollar volume was happening in Brookings. He just said no, and he kept using, oh, bad location. Well, during winter of 2007-2008, Ford and General Motors were closing down dealerships around the country, and I flew out of Brookings. I drove by Brookings on a flight on a Friday, and I came back on a Sunday, and the Ford dealership was empty. And I thought, okay, he can't get out of this one. This is a great location, and it fit perfect for a lumberyard. And so I went back to work, and I said, hey, Dad, you can't get out of this one. Here we go. And it summarized a couple days there. He basically said, you're serious? And I said, yeah, let's do it. Why wouldn't we do it? Again, like I said, I'm in my mid-20s. I don't know anything.
You're ready to take the risks.
Just aggressive, yeah. And he told me that day in his office, it was the end of January, I think around the 28th or so. And he sat there and said, if you're serious, okay, your mom and I will support it financially, but I quit. And I thought, what?
Whoa.
I don't want anything to do with two stores. I don't want anything to do with two staffs. I don't want anything to do with two fleets of trucks. He says, you're on your own. He says, but I'll support you. And so that was a major crossroad for our company. And that was the end of January in 08. And by June 1st, one of his requests were that I had to have the store open June 1st that year. Mm-hmm. And we hit that deadline, and that was our second store. And we're at 7 now, and what are we, 13 years later. So, you know, we're averaging a store, you know, less than every couple years. And the growth's been fun. It's been fast. My hairline shows it, but we're having fun. I got a great staff. We got some awesome key people that have been with us for a long time. And this growth is really, a lot of it's on their shoulders because, you know, I come up with ideas, and these guys help execute them, and without them, I couldn't. So, no, great staff, and most of these key players have been with us for, you know, shoot, we got one guy celebrating a 40th anniversary this year. And,
oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, he was one of my father's first hires around 1981. So, and he's been an exceptional employee since, so it's been great.
You grew the operation, and we kind of already talked about this, but what – I loved hearing the story of going from 1 to 2, and like the reins were basically passed to you. Your dad was like, okay, I'm stepping back. It's all on you now. What was it like as you kept growing bigger and bigger? And I know I kind of joked, it's like playing Monopoly, but like after a while, I'm sure part of it is like you have to strategize and like really think through, does this location make sense? Like, what has that been like, you know, just being in a consistent push with growing? And do you see more stores in your future? Is that something you're still just kind of open to, but not like there's no like definite plans right now?
Well, actually, it's interesting, our growth. It's really, besides the second store, the other ones, I guess would say, kind of fell in our laps. Mm-hmm. The third store was, if you want to call it an acquisition, but it was more of a previous ownership. There was just an opportunity happened. So we're a member of the Do It Best Co-op, and sure. A store, for whatever reasons, dropped their Do It Best membership, which opened up the next town to the north of us. It opened up the Do It Best membership in that region. And I bleed orange with Do It Best, and I wouldn't open a store without Do It Best. So when that membership, when that region came available for that town, we stepped in and took advantage of that. But we actually ended up acquiring a True Values location. We didn't acquire their business per se. There was someone who had been, his family business had been there for decades, and they were ready to get out. And basically, we just purchased their real estate from them, and that became our third location. So that I really wasn't out looking for that one. That one just kind of opened up. And again, then the fourth and the fifth ones, the ownership of the fourth and fifth stores, there was two gentlemen who were mid 60 years age, one I think believe might be early 70s, and they've been doing it for 30-40 years, and I'd known them through different trade shows and different vendor meetings, and they were Do It Best members also, and they just called and said, hey, we want to cash out, we want out. Mm-hmm. And they had known I just did the third store, and again, I'm relatively young, especially at the time, and they said, hey, we want you to take over basically our employees. You know, we like what you do with staff, how you treat your people, and we want to make this work for you. So they put together a package for me that was extremely, aggressive, because I mean they wanted to pass the baton. One of them kind of developed some health issues, which would push the closing up a little quicker time frame wise, but you know, they just made an opportunity I couldn't say no to. So again, I wasn't out looking for that one either. And then now I go in relatively, basically 2-3 years, I go from two stores to five, and it's like boom. And that's, you don't necessarily spend your time at that point working on nuts and bolts anymore. It's okay, I need to develop systems and processes, and I need to restructure my organizational staff to handle the growth. We grew 40-45% overnight in those stores four and five. And I mean, the world changed. Yeah. And of course, you pick up two stores who do things completely different. So I learned a lot in that transition, about how to come in and speak with staff, new staff especially. Just the transition. We took one store and we tried to do it all ourselves, the transformation. We accomplished it, but it went a little slower than partnering with Do It Best to help us through a lot of the transition with inventory and resets and merchandising. So learned a lot there. We can do it, but that's not our business, and we're not near as efficient as someone who does it every day. So we picked up some bumps and bruises along those roads, but we accomplished our goals. And the sixth store, again, same thing. We're trying to get the world right with the five we got. And a seller's broker called me and just random cold call. And I said, yeah, I mean, I'll look at anyone's P&Ls that's for sale, because, you know, I think so far we've acquired some real gems. I don't necessarily, I'm not out looking for projects, but if you can turnkey that's self-sufficient and is not going to put my corporation at risk, then I'm going to look at it for sure. Yeah, the sixth one worked out well. That one actually, there was actually a couple negotiations there. Started out of the gates, and I had just, this is the same year I closed on four and five. It's 2016. Uh-huh. And obviously you buy two stores and then you transform them to your system, and there's a lot of expense in 1 year. And to be fair, I didn't have all of the cash to acquire that sixth store. But I made an offer, and an owner carry type offer, and it didn't work out. And that's when okay. And actually, we looped back around. They came back to me after probably 18 months after trying to, you know, still sell the place. And I was in a much stronger financial position at that point. And we were able to put the sixth one together. So again, you know, I wasn't out chasing it. They knocked on our door. The seventh one, though, I will say was a chase. We just did that one in August of 20. It was actually a direct competitor, a great Ace store that was in Brookings. And from a defensive standpoint, not necessarily offensive, but from a defensive standpoint in that region, I guess we picked up our largest competitor. So that one, we targeted that one, but the rest of them just kind of fallen in our lap. So to say I got a secret sauce for acquisition, I don't know if that'd be a fair statement.
So could you maybe tell our listeners a little bit about what your day-to-day focus is in your role? And I know you mentioned it's a lot less of, like, you know, the everyday stuff in the store. It's more overarching. But could you maybe share with what some of those things are that your day-to-day life is like in the job?
I need less
if
to
you
do.
Even are able to. Yeah. you're a yes guy?
Yeah, with our growth, my passion has been inventory, inventory control, merchandise, things of that nature. So still to this day, I'm supervising. I'm not saying I'm doing it all. I've delegated a lot of the daily stuff out, but I'm still doing a lot of inventory. And okay. We're trying to build a team to get me out of that role because it's exceptionally time consuming. It's exceptionally time consuming right now in the world we live in with, you know, vendor issues, supply issues. There's a lot of chasing and hunting going on to make sure you got something on your shelves. And so, you know, my day honestly is a lot of that. We speak frequently with I've got out of being in the stores. I was trying to be in the stores weekly, and that became a nightmare every other week, especially during acquisitions. Because, you know, during acquisition, basically I'm the project leader, so I'll need to more or less be in that for, you know, 3 to 4 months in a row, which makes it very difficult to be in all the other stores. So we're trying to my goal right now is to try and develop a corporate team and get more corporate help so that I can focus on maybe going out and hunting for some more acquisitions and being proactive versus reactive. But right now, that's the transition phase we're in is, you know, when we added this next store, you know, it's crazy. In 3 or 4 years, we've more than doubled our sales volume.
Wow.
So it's just trying to keep up with growing pains and then reorganize your company. It's fun, but it's every day. I just say every day can be different. So it's never right. It could be OSHA. I mean, COVID's been a challenge this year, you know, and trying to get, you know, multiple store managers to all be on the same page and really comprehend why we're doing what we're doing and what the end play is. Working on communication daily, you know, the more our staff knows, the more they understand why we're making the decisions we're doing. Don't want to be just, hey, this is the rules, live by them. You know, it's like, no, this is why we do it. So we're just, we're every day we're trying to grow and be better. And that's, we preach that to the staff. Are you better today than you were yesterday? And so, I don't know, we're having fun.
Cool. So what do you enjoy most about the industry, and what are some of the company's goals moving forward? I know you mentioned still wanting to grow, so it sounds like that's something that you're definitely keeping your eye on if there's other opportunities out there, it sounds like.
As far as I really enjoy the people of this industry. The first couple jobs I had right out of college were, one was in the medical industry and the other one was in the manufacturing industry. The medical industry was tough. And I was on the sales side of it, and it's cold calling, and I didn't necessarily care for, it could have been the region I was into, but I really didn't care for the culture per se. The manufacturing culture, I would say, is similar to the building culture or the hardware culture. just good blue collar people that they honestly just want to get up in the morning and they want to put their name on something and be proud of it. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate the people of this industry. The vendors are wonderful too. I mean, I have some great vendor relationships. I've become personal friends with a lot of vendors. They're just good people. And I think a lot of us are in this industry because of the people. My staff, they're exceptional. I mean, I've got lifelong relationships with staff. I got staff that changed my diaper, and I've got
oh my gosh,
I've changed their kids' diapers. So, you know, we really
circle
are
circle of diapers.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just they're great people. But with these great people, talking about what's in store for us in the future. We know we've kind of set a tone that we're not going to be idle. You know, we're looking to grow, whether that's how do we take a store and organically grow at 20%, or do we look and try and make another acquisition or do a startup? So I don't know what's going on in the next 12 months per se, but I can say in the next 24 months, if I had a choice, I would say, you know, I want to do another ground up. You know, be able to have your fingers in everything from absolutely literally the foundation. That way, yeah. You get the store layout you want, you get the fixtures you want, point of sale you want, and you can implement your own team and staff. Because you know we can cherry pick from all 7 stores some incredible staff members. And put together an all-star team, because once you go into a new market, I mean, it's tough to break into, but if you got great people, at the end of the day, it's all about relationships. People shop at the independent hardware store for relationships, not necessarily for price or selection. Yeah. But it comes down to just when I walk in the door, is this a place I want to be? And it's fun to put those kind of teams together that people walk in the door and you can just feel a vibe in most of our stores, or I should say all the stores. People want to be there. I mean, there's laughing going on, you know, there's joking. There's just energy in the stores. And so that's a lot of fun. And to see that grow is, I mean, it's fairly rewarding.
So we've talked a bit about your employees, but how many would you say you have across all of the stores, all locations? And I do like the idea. It's kind of wild to think that you have people working there that they changed your diaper and then you've changed their kids' diapers or whatever. Like that, it's just you can tell it's a long-standing business with loyal, not just customers, but loyal employees. So maybe just tell me a little bit about the group of employees you have and just anything you want to share about them.
Well, we've restructured a couple times internally. And, right now we're around roughly 150 full-time employees.
Okay.
I probably run a little leaner than some others do, maybe as far as employees, but we're proud that we have very, very few part-time employees. We want to make an investment in the employee, not just a temporary, hey, you can have 12 hours this week or 20 hours next week. We really have tried to shy away from temporary employees because we feel like we want to make a commitment to you and we feel that we get a commitment in return. And we want to make it a great place to work. And mm-hmm. honestly, we don't even necessarily want to use the word work, but it's just a great place to spend your day. So that's a goal of ours, a goal of mine. Because I don't want to be anywhere I don't want to be. And so, you know, I've had numerous conversations with people that, you know, they come and, you know, their life is hard. And they're struggling with things here and there. And you just have, hey, we're going to have an adult conversation. And if you don't want to be here, that's okay. You know, if I want to support you because life's too short, you know, you need to enjoy, you're going to spend majority of your day sleeping and at work. So you need to enjoy both of those if you can.
Yeah.
So with that being said, we really focus on trying to hire people full time. We have a guy that works for us, Dean Krushke. He's done an excellent job implementing a hiring process for us and also a training program for us. We need a tremendous amount of NHPA's resources. We Yeah, your training modules are spectacular. This is even me pre getting into NHPA, but the training modules, we've implemented those, and you know, I set Dina the tasks that, you know, as you're developing these stores, you know, you go into a store and you're helping customers, and you look over there and I don't know, Billy, I don't have a Billy, but you just say, hey, yeah. Billy, can you please make a key for someone? And Billy says, I don't know how to do that. Well, that's one of the most fundamental things in a hardware store is to make a key. I tasked Dean, I want to know that every single person in our store by the second week knows how to make a key. I don't care if you're a forklift driver or you are a store manager, you need to know how to make a key. Because having a customer stand at a key kiosk for more than a handful of seconds, if you want to call it that, that's just poor service. Those people are coming to us because we provide a service to them, and they want to be there. Don't make the person wait because you don't know how to make a key. Same thing with paint. Yeah. Now, our forklift drivers don't know how to make paint, but everyone that works inside the store can squirt a can of paint. If you want a custom car match, that's a different story. But anyone in our stores can grab a paint chip, type it in the computer, and squirt a bucket of paint. So Dean came out. He created a schedule for overnight. The first 90 days of every single employee, we know what they're doing every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it is completely tasked out, and there's different points throughout the 90 days where they meet with different people throughout the organization to discuss certain aspects and philosophies and training. But, you know, we've really mapped out those 90 days. So, you know, I know literally in the middle of the third week, once you get through your third week, you know how to make paint.
And there's no
standing around, and someone should not be standing at the paint counter by themselves. Anyone in the store should be able to walk by and say, can I help you? And have confidence to help them.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I think that's huge. And I'm glad you say that, because I think sometimes in my role, obviously I do the podcast, but I'm on the member services side. So I deal a lot and I'm always trying to help members. And one of the big things that we talk about is training, and kind of an objection I get from people a lot is we don't have time. And I try and tell them, like, if you don't do it though, I'm not a retailer. So what would you say to someone who's like, I don't have time to train my employees? Like, I don't know if there are any thoughts you have on that, because obviously you guys have made time for it, but.
It's an investment. And any investment takes time to mature.
Yeah.
We struggled the first year implementing this training program and even hiring process. We went out and to hiring process, simplify it. We targeted our best employees at specific positions. We gave them personality profiles. We gave them cognitive tests. And we basically created a profile that if you want to hire someone for this position, they need to be plus or minus 10% of this range.
Sure.
And so with that implemented, and then the training program, again, the training program is 90 days. If you have a hole to fill, you need an employee to show up on Monday to go to work. Well, even though you got a hole to fill, these people are still going to execute their 90-day training. So that first year was very difficult because store managers saying, we can't do this. This is hard. This is tough. And it's just like, no, you got to do it. We're committed to the process. We're committed because long term, we know that it's an investment.
The rewards. Yeah.
It's going to pay long term. Once we got through our first 12, 18 months of this program, you know, store managers like, wow, all of a sudden these people who went through this training program were starting to become instant floor leaders at the stores. Because they had confidence. They went through the program, and they may have never been in the hardware or lumber industry, but all of a sudden they had confidence because they've been trained relatively properly. It's exciting to see that store managers recognize that, like, wow, A, we're hiring the right people, that they fit the job. They're happy to come to work, and we're happy that they're at work. B, they've been trained on how to do their job properly.
Yeah.
So, and their job satisfaction is much better. You know, I've been thrown the fire, and you have no clue what you're doing. Can't speak the language, don't know anything, but yet you're expected to be able to mix a can of paint. And it's really hard for coworkers to train staff because they have other things to do too. You know, to take an hour out of your day to train someone to make paint, that's very difficult. But to utilize the resources, Do It Best has some great training resources. And then again, NHPA's resources, we're not doing as much training on the floor as we used to. A lot of it's online, and that we have workstations set up at each store, and they sit there and they go through the process. And realistically, the first few weeks, they might be on the computer 2 to 4 hours a day, and then they're spending the other four hours shadowing, not necessarily getting trained, but just shadowing. And so that's I mean, the dividends we're paying are great, but like for someone who's just starting out, you're like, well, I don't have time. You're right, you don't have time. But it's very similar to putting money into an equity or a stock, or what, you know, it matures over time. And so you don't put your money in there expecting it to pay or to be perfect the next day. It's a long-term investment. Well, same thing with your staff. Your staff's a long-term investment, and you gotta just put in the time to let it mature. And our way of getting that maturity to happen quicker is this training program. So really excited about it. I'm proud of the work Dean and his team have done, and I'm proud of our store managers for the execution. We're really happy with the team we have right now of our 150 staff.
Yeah, well, that's great, and I think that's an awesome, you know, observation on it too, is like for some people, maybe they don't have the time initially, but by making that time, you'll see the reward later on. And I think it'll even help with hiring, having a trained staff. Once someone can come in and they have the support to get started, then they're not going to be like, oh, forget this, I'm going to go find a job somewhere else because I don't know what I'm doing. Like, they gain that confidence pretty quickly, so I think that's great.
Our retention's been much better since we implemented this.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome to hear too. Kind of shifting gears, I remembered you, and I remembered your name because a couple years ago, it was probably my second year, but my first year at the National Hardware Show, getting to go out there, and you were one of the 2015 Young Retailer of the Year honorees. So that was my first introduction to you. But do you mind kind of telling us what that experience was like, and was that kind of one of your first initial interactions with the association on a maybe a deeper level, I guess?
It was absolutely my first initiation with the organization. Off the radar, really. We were just in a firestorm of growth around that 2015 mark, and trying to figure out, you know, we had three stores, we were on the hook for two more, and just trying to just figure life out. Yes. I had three young boys and a great wife. So, you know, trying to figure out how to balance the home life. My oldest kid would have been six, maybe seven at the time. And so you got a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old, and then you got one in the middle, and then trying to grow your business, life was crazy. So that was the first, and it's very flattering, but that was the first really form of recognition that myself or the family had, because it wasn't just me. I mean, my dad built an incredible foundation for me to step into and really just add maybe some enthusiasm, per se.
Sure.
Because I mean, I still operate on most of his fundamental foundations. It's just, I want to say it's just the risk. Maybe I'm a little more risk adverse than he is, or and a lot of it has to do with age too. Because he, by the time 2008 had come around, he'd been doing it for basically 30 years, and he was tired, and he was 7 days a week, 30 years. Young Retailer of the Year, it was a great honor for not just myself, but for my family. Sacrifices my parents made, and grandparents and great-grandparents. And I just happened to be the one there at the time that was young enough to accept it. But no, great. It's an absolutely spectacular event or program there. Program that NHPA does, because you meet a lot of these young retailers, past and present, and there's a lot of energy in that room, and there's a lot of, it's very humbling. There's a lot of really smart people in that group, and just to sit in a room with those people, I could be a fly on the wall and just listen to them talk, because you're going to absorb so much information, and like I said, again, energy into the industry. It's fun to It's fun to watch.
It's cool that that was kind of your introduction to NHPA, or formerly NRHA. But then after kind of that introduction, how did you guys, like, what was the relationship like in the year since 2015 to now being a member of the board, which is congratulations. But maybe just tell me a little bit about the years in between before you got to where you're at now with us.
Yeah, well, being, I don't know if I'm as far away from the headquarters in Indianapolis as a member could be, but Young Retailer happened, and then NHRA then hosted a Young Retailer Forum roundtable, invited all previous awardees to that event, and that's really where my relationship formed with NHRA back then. And I got to come to the headquarters and sit through that round table and that discussion point. And then it was like, holy cow, look at all the resources in this place.
Yeah.
And a bunch of really smart people that are here to try and make us better.
Yeah.
And you know, in Gold Beach, Oregon, I had no clue that it even existed.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years prior. And I mean, it's like, wow, for me, you know, basically living on an island where we did, you know, you're trying to reinvent the wheel. You feel like you are. And you get tied in with NHPA and it's like, well, they've already done all this stuff for you. Mm-hmm. The cost of doing business study, that I look at that almost monthly just to make sure, you know, oh, this or that, or you're thinking about ideas, or, you know, you're looking at acquisitions, and you know, coming from a lumberyard / hardware background, okay, you're looking at a hardware store now. Okay, well, I'm going to go to the cost of doing business study, and I'm going to look at those ratios. The people I'm interested in buying, where do they fall into these ratios? I mean, it's what an awesome tool, and what an awesome tool for me also to use as some justification, I guess, with my staff. It's like, hey guys, you need to get this expense to this ratio, and they might just think I'm pulling out of my hat. I'm like, well, look at the cost of doing business study. This isn't just me. It's 1,500 other people are in the same ratio, more or less. So I was like, okay, I got you now. And we've sent numerous employees back to NHPA employee programs.
Yeah.
What an awesome tool there also.
RMC, the Retail Management Certification Program.
Yeah, that RMCP. I think 1, 2, 3, 4. I think I have 5 staff members that attended that, and they're all my leaders.
They're stars. That's great.
There's the leadership program going on right now. I think we have 4 or 5 people enrolled in that. It's honestly life changing for a lot of these people. It just completely changes their approach when they walk through the doors in the morning. They see things differently. They see the world differently inside your stores. They see staff differently, vendor relationships differently. I mean, it's in the last, you know, a lot of our individual staff members' growth that have taken these programs have really been catapulted by those NHPA programs. So
that's
once
great.
We started going down that road in 17 and 18, and really utilizing this course 19, you know, Gold Beach Lumber started getting much more involved. And that's kind of how I ended up becoming a board member, was our involvement in meeting some of the previous board members. And then there's like, hey, I mean, obviously, I don't say at the time we weren't necessarily a partner of NHPA, but we were definitely a using member. And like, hey, you know, we've had some good luck, and hey, you got some good things going on. Do you want to help us continue to grow? Like, okay, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Do you mind sharing with our listeners just a little bit about how the board works on behalf of the industry? And, you know, I think that's, for me, what's been so cool is getting to know the board members over the years, because you are the independent retailers we're serving, and you're able to give a voice to retailers all over about, you know, what you think is important and what might not be important. But maybe just kind of share with our listeners who don't know that we have a board or don't understand what the board even does, like just kind of a general rundown of that for them.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic. The previous boards I've served on, you know, are hospital boards and school boards, things of that nature. So they're a little more government based. And this one here, I didn't kind of know what to expect, because there's definitely rules to be a board member.
Yeah.
And this board here, it's really comprised of, just like you said, a bunch of independent retailers who all kind of come from miscellaneous backgrounds. You know, and our, I would say actually more than anything, our role is a is as a supporting board. And what I mean by that is, NHPA has a spectacular leadership team. Very engaged, very organized. It's a well-run machine. I was very surprised when I sat through my first board meeting. It's a great team. Mm-hmm. Our position is to help facilitate, but to be involved and participate in future growth discussions. And honestly, probably to be more of a sounding board for ideas that the leadership team at NHPA has. Because again, we're a pretty diverse group. I mean, we all sell nuts and bolts, but some of us sell boards. Some of us, I call it knickknacks, but you know, some people are more into crafts. You know, we're all over the place, but you know, everything's got a bin tag on it. So at the end of the day, it's a widget, and we're all just selling widgets.
Yeah.
But we all come at it at different angles. And I think our biggest, as a board, our biggest tool is being able to be that sounding board for ideas that the staff there at NHPA has.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's cool too is, to me, NHPA is like the Switzerland of the industry, because we're able to bring retailers from various wholesalers and co-ops together. And, you know, there's always that friendly competition of like, oh, I'm an ace, or I'm a do it best, or I'm a true value, or whatever someone's flag is. But what I think is so cool is when you come in our doors or you get together in events that we try and host, is we try and say, like, let's leave that stuff. That's important. That's great. But like, this is a chance to get to know everyone. And at the end of the day, you know, you guys are the independents, no matter where you're associated. So that's just my thoughts.
No,
on
and
that
you're absolutely
too.
Right. We, you know, I've sat through multiple roundtables or meetings or discussions with NHPA and other independents. NHPA is great because you're right. They look at it as an umbrella. And Best, Ace, True Value, Orgel, we all fall under the umbrella, and we all have the same issues. We're all fighting the big box. Mm-hmm. Or compete, and how do we make us independents better? How do we give us independents the opportunity to have the tools to be better? NHPA is extremely independent, and yeah, there's some side joking going on between different people depending on what organization you're with, but I mean, fundamentally, we all have the same issues. And NHPA is that link to get us all together and moving the same direction, and hopefully that's winning every day. It's a phenomenal tool for an independent person, especially one when you feel like you're on an island.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we found you back in 2015 and kind of were able to have you join the fold and really help serve your industry, which is what you're doing. Why do you think other retailers, if maybe they're in the position you're in, maybe they found this podcast randomly, they don't even get the magazine, or they get the magazine, but they're not really involved. Why do you think they should get involved with NHPA? And like, what do you think others could gain from being involved?
The bucket of resources. I mean, if you really think about it, most independent owners or managers, store managers, we lay in bed at night thinking about how can we improve.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually took the amount of time you think about improving and just actually implemented some of the programs that NHPA has, you're going to spend less time implementing NHPA's program than you will, I shouldn't say wasting time, but developing in your mind how are you going to implement this and build it.
Yeah.
And you're gonna be better tomorrow than you were today, and much quicker. So, if I could give anyone advice, it's you know, get a hold of someone. I know there's different people in the organization to help walk you through, whether it's how to understand the cost of doing business study, RMCP class, the retail management certification. I mean, that's a spectacular class. I mean, that is the it's a high level college class that your staff or yourself has the opportunity to take. But reach out to these people at NHPA and just say, hey, I want to do this. And there's a well, it used to be a staff upstairs, but there's a staff, really, I mean, you know, very happily wanting to talk to someone about how to implement what the resources are available and how it fits. And I highly encourage someone to make a phone call.
Well, it's been so fun getting to talk to you today and like learn more about you and share your story with our listeners. I'm sure if once we get back to events and things, maybe they'll see you at an industry event and or they'll be passing through one of your stores and could see, even if they don't see you, they'll see your employees. But is there any last things you wanted to share with our listeners before we end the conversation today?
No, I think I'm good. I appreciate your time, Renee. And
yeah.
Appreciate everything you're doing for the organization. So thank you.